Good morning. It's 8:06 on this Monday morning, April 20th. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. 45 degrees right now in Old Town Park City, reporting 44 degrees there at the Heber Airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Monday. Look for plenty of sunshine as we go throughout today. Just a few high clouds expected. High temperatures in Park City climbing to around 70 degrees this afternoon. We'll be seeing those highs climbing into the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into the forecast for your Tuesday, look for a mixture of sun and clouds. So we'll call it partly cloudy skies out there. Temperatures warming up even more. How about high temperatures in the low 70s again for us in Park City and highs in the mid 70s in the Heber Valley? Again, these temperatures about 10 to 20 degrees above average across the Wasatch Back. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, we start to see some changes. A storm system begins to move our way. That storm system will bring us a chance of some rain showers here developing for your Wednesday afternoon into Wednesday night in the Heber Valley. High temperatures will climb into the mid 50s. Now, as you get towards Park City and areas above 6,500 to 7,000 feet, some of this will fall in the form of snow shower activity, especially Wednesday night into Thursday morning. As overnight lows dip down below freezing, we could even see some of those snow showers mix in the Heber Valley. Now, still a little early for speculation on accumulations. We're still trying to fine-tune exactly the timing of the storm system and the moisture, but that winter weather chance will return again as we get towards the middle of the week. So enjoy spring while we have it for the first half of the week. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, look for highs to be in the 40s in Park City with highs in the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. For the end of the week, we're going to keep an isolated chance of showers around us. There's the potential of it staying unsettled through next weekend. Still some uncertainty on exactly how that plays out, but the big story is expect a chance of precipitation and also expect cooler temperatures with below average numbers with highs only in around 50 in Park City and highs only in the mid to upper 50s in the Heber Valley. Overall, again, very spring-like to kick off the week with well above average temperatures Monday and Tuesday. But get ready for a big change by the middle of the work week as we track more valley rain and mountain snow. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the executive director of the Utah Housing Coalition, Tara Rollins, with details on the Summit County winners of the Utah Housing Coalition Awards, also what came out of the legislative session to assist affordable housing. Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher and Programs Director Heather Sims with an update on youth sport programs, and from the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, Director Robert Parrish calling in with an update. The Summit County Joint SWAT team responded to an alleged domestic assault of a home on Bobsled Drive in Bear Hollow Sunday afternoon. Summit County Sheriff spokesperson Skylar Talbot says dispatchers received a 911 call at about 3 yesterday afternoon, but the caller or callers had left by the time law enforcement arrived. The Summit County Sheriff's Office press release says a man is wanted in connection with the alleged assault. When the joint SWAT team of Park City officers and Summit County deputies responded, they confirmed the man was no longer at the home. They initially believed he had barricaded himself inside. Talbot says authorities left the scene between 9 and 10 p.m. last night. Summit County deputies were still looking for the man in question as of last night. Talbot says there is no immediate threat to public safety. Well, Summit County Council members have passed a local law to bring renewable energy to their constituents for a fee. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the program has been 7 years in the making.
It's official. Power customers in Summit County will have a new choice, says County Sustainability Director Emily Quinton.
All eligible Rocky Mountain Power customers within our unincorporated boundaries will have a new option for choosing clean energy right through their bill. And by investing in clean energy, the program will help to meet our growing energy demands while keeping power reliable and meeting those demands with non-polluting sources.
Wednesday, the county council unanimously approved the Community Clean Energy Program, as it's known, that automatically enrolls everyone with Rocky Mountain Power Service in the unincorporated county. Residents will pay an extra $4 monthly for the program. Businesses will see an estimated 5% added to their bill. The funds will pay for renewable energy construction. The new infrastructure is supposed to offset demand in Summit County and 18 other participating Utah cities and counties. Councils in Park City, Francis, Oakley, and Colville have until early June to vote to join the program. Any customer in a participating city or county can opt out for free within the first 6 months of the program's launch. Low-income residents are exempt from the extra fees, including a termination fee for opting out. Environmental advocates closely watched this year's state legislative session as a measure in House Bill 238 would have made the program opt-in, like Rocky Mountain's existing Blue Sky program. Bill sponsor Representative Carl Albrecht, a Republican from Bicknell, reversed course after outcry from environmentalists. Summit County leaders have previously noted that opt-in programs virtually all fail. Albrecht told a Senate committee he, quote, listens to constituents, and groups like Utah Clean Energy rejoiced.
You know, a lot of these communities, Salt Lake, Park City, and others, were concerned about the image that might be created with the 2034 Olympics, whether we're serving black electrons or green electrons.
Quinton says that state lawmakers previously changed the clean energy program to keep rates low. They walked back to strict requirements to offset all participating customers' energy use.
And while it is no longer required by state law, the communities that are involved are still feeling connected to the goals that they set back in 2019 to work towards net 100% renewable energy for participating customers.
Summit County Council members praised the renewable energy program before voting to approve it April 15th. Quinton says past county leaders were instrumental in getting the program passed in 2019. Councilmember Roger Armstrong credited former colleague Glenn Wright, who he said was pounding the table to make that happen. Here's Councilmember Tanya Hansen.
Considering the crazy world that we're living in right now, and some of the policies moving away from renewables to more oil exploration and wars over oil, and I think it's really important that we take action on this.
The program's estimated launch date is later this year or early 2027. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Heber City Council will re-examine its downtown events contract with the Community Alliance for Main Street, that following a complaint to the state auditor. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
Heber City Manager Matt Brower's contract was renewed April 14th after a tense meeting that ended with a 4-2 vote. Mayor Heidi Franco and Councilmember Yvonne Barney cast the no votes on Brower's retention and spoke with KPCW about their concerns after the meeting. Here's Barney.
We all know that there's an investigation pending, and while it may come back with nothing, it may come back with something, and I believe strongly that there needed to be some time to allow that to follow through.
She's referring to a complaint submitted to the Utah Office of the State Auditor about the city's contract with the Community Alliance for Main Street. KAMS is a nonprofit dedicated to making downtown Heber a vibrant place to shop, dine, and gather. In January, the council unanimously voted to give KAMS a contract to provide downtown events. But a complaint alleges that Brower didn't disclose his role as a volunteer board member of KAMS and that Heber City didn't go through the proper bid process before hiring KAMS. Brower was named as a board member in meeting materials from January. Former City Council member Rachel Kaler has led KAMS for nearly 2 years.
It's curious to me that people are upset that KAMS has been really is the only organization that was considered in this, because it made such sense that the downtown organization would help foster events and bringing people downtown.
Heber City is not required to go through a full public bidding process if only one person or organization can provide the services. Staff think KAMS meets that standard. To be safe, the city asked the Park City Sunday Market and the Historic Park City Alliance what they would charge. Both quoted prices significantly more than what Heber will pay KAMS. The Heber City Council will vote on whether to ratify the KAMS contract at its meeting Tuesday. If approved, KAMS will receive about $40,000 in each of the next 3 years to lead downtown programming. Kaler says Heber City locals have a lot to look forward to this summer.
So I've had the opportunity now to reach out to the car show, the art festival. We've got Children's Day in the park. We've added a couple of new events with Cinco de Mayo party and the Dog's Day in the park.
Other events include free weekend yoga and music in the park, and the popular Thursday night Heber Market on Main. To read more about the city's contract with KAMS, visit kpcw.org. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Utah Housing Coalition is hosting its annual Coalition Awards Dinner next week, and two Park City-based organizations will be honored. On the phone with me from the Utah Housing Coalition, I have Zoe Newman. Good morning, Zoe. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Yeah, happy to be here.
So for listeners who may not be familiar, what is the Utah Housing Coalition and what role does it play in Utah's housing landscape?
Yeah, so the Utah Housing Coalition is a membership-based organization, and we do education, advocacy, and community building around affordable housing. And so we do everything like bringing people together for awards dinners, like the one we have coming up just to recognize affordable housing excellence, all the way to hosting the largest housing conference in the state, which brings together housing innovators from across the nation, actually, to talk about how to innovate here in Utah. And so we do a lot of things in the affordable housing landscape, but we like to call ourselves the connectors.
Yeah. So how do you would you describe, I guess, your core mission in a state facing significant housing affordability challenges?
Yeah, so our mission basically is to increase the affordable housing stock, and I would say education, advocacy, and community building like around affordable housing projects. And so what we're trying to do at the Utah Housing Coalition is kind of break down those barriers and stigma surrounding affordable housing. And really do things at all levels of advocacy, of policy work, and the research that it takes to get these projects off the ground. Yeah. And so we just start conversations. We gravitate towards fires, and so that's basically what we do.
Yeah. So what are the biggest housing issues the coalition is focused on right now here in the state?
Yeah, I would say the biggest issue right now is obviously affordable housing in general, and we believe it's going to take a diverse housing stock to solve that issue. However, when you look at the housing landscape, we have a deeply affordable issue in our communities as well. And so that's 30% AMI, which for those of you who don't know, area median income. We have a 44,000 unit deficit in our state of deeply affordable housing that 30% AMI or below can afford. And with that being said, I mean, that's our workforce. Those are people that support our economy, which is why it's important to celebrate when people are able to make these projects pencil and do innovative stuff. Kind of like what they're doing in Park City, and why we're celebrating two different projects in Park City at our awards dinner. So I would say our biggest problem right now is just that deeply affordable housing and just having that available for folks that need it, especially as we continue to make goals in our state surrounding home ownership. It's really hard to save for home ownership when folks are spending more than half of their income on rent, and that doesn't leave a lot of wiggle room for when you experience, a medical crisis or a crisis like just with your transportation or even, figuring out childcare and all those other barriers that low-income folks have when they're navigating through communities.
All right. Utah Housing Coalition is a nonprofit organization. How are you funded?
Yeah, so like I said, we're a membership-based organization, and then we host like two big events every year. And so those kind of help with the funding for our organization. But we apply for grants. Actually, this year we got money from the state to help with a project, and that's the first time we got money from the state. And so yeah, we do a lot of things like that. So we just like all the other nonprofits, we apply for funding, we fundraise. And Utah is very lucky. We have like a big CRA presence here. We have a lot of banks. And so we definitely partner with a lot of banking partners as well to make all of this happen.
Yeah. So with relatively modest revenue compared to the scale of the housing crisis, how does the coalition prioritize then where to focus your efforts?
Yeah, and so we're not developers of affordable housing. Our members are, and I would say not to speak for any of them, but I think our members are very strategic and they partner strategically, and so I think that's where those kind of conversations come in, and they trickle down through, you know, our state partners and nonprofits communicate with each other. And so I think that's how we make it happen. And also it depends on the land, the community, and where you're developing as well, because that really can dictate, like, what you can make possible. And then I would say also, like, the funding and the capital stack, I mean, that really matters when you're penciling in a project. So that's why when we say, like, 30% AMI, it's very impressive. Like, when a project gets pulled up, and it's even like 50% AMI or below, or 60% AMI or below. And so I would just say that they communicate with each other. They talk to local, like, municipalities. They talk to their communities, other nonprofits, and then figure out what the greatest need is. And I would say that's how projects are prioritized.
Yeah. What's the, I know there's a project here in Summit County that just can't get off the ground because it can't get its hands on these low-income tax credits. Does your organization help secure those at all, or what's your role in that?
No, we do not, but we definitely understand the struggle. But sometimes that's why projects get paused or put on hold, is because, you know, resources are not abundant. And so sometimes things like that take a little while to get off the ground. But yeah, we do not administer tax credits or anything like that.
All right. Are there any current projects or collaborations you're especially excited about?
I would say, you know, we, like I said, we're not a developer of affordable housing, but I would say we've heard of a few projects, like, here in Salt Lake. We're a statewide organization, and so there are a few projects coming online. I know Valley Behavioral Health has a project coming online soon. CDC Utah has been working on some fun projects. NeighborWorks Salt Lake has been working on a handful of projects. So I would just stay tuned and just kind of stay plugged in. And there are a lot of fun projects that I think that will be completed by the end of 2026 and some going into 2027.
All right. Well, taking a kind of a look back at this legislative session, it was, you know, affordable housing was one of the top priorities. Where did things end up? I mean, do we have some legislation that's going to help build the housing that's needed?
Yeah. So I would say this previous legislative session was very interesting in the sense where there was a lot of conversation surrounding affordable housing. And I would say that even the bills that did not pass, so for example, Ward had a like small lot size bill. I believe it was Representative Ward's bill, HB 184. And that was a great bill. And I think a lot of people, you know, were in support of it. However, you know, a lot of people were not in support of it. And it ended up not passing. However, it started a lot of great conversations, I think, between, you know, state, municipalities, nonprofits that are excited about affordable housing. And so I think that was like kind of like one of those small wins where maybe it didn't look like a win on paper, but, you know, if you were up on the hill and having those conversations, it was great. And then I would say Representative Roberts, he had a couple of bills surrounding affordable housing, more particularly his HB 68, which led to the housing reorg. So it pulled housing out of its current location and into the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, which that was a strategic reorganization in order to bring more light. So kind of pull housing, if you will, like out of like the shadows and pull it out of conversations where, you know, it maybe gets overlooked and not prioritized, and then pulls it into a space where it can be really prioritized and people can have a lot of good conversations surrounding it. And so that was something that was very exciting. And I would just give a shout out to Steve Waldrop. who's the housing leader out of the governor's office, who's been doing a lot of great work with, you know, pulling together communities and starting to have this conversation. So I would say a lot of great bills. This legislative session, we have it on our website. We have a kind of like a legislative session recap, which touches on all of those bills if people want to learn more. But I would say this year was kind of the year of having really great conversations and opening the doors to potentially some really cool and innovative legislation next session. So I would just say stay tuned. But yeah, it was a good session.
Yeah, I think, and just with House Bill 184 in particular, I think that was something that Summit County did not want. And I think the reason that they didn't want it is that it's like a bill, like you say, it has statewide ramifications, and yet one size mm-hmm. doesn't fit all in developing affordable housing, and it would have taken away local control. So are we doing it wrong? I mean, you can't throw a blanket on the problem, especially when you have such high land costs in Summit and Wasatch counties.
No, of course. And I think that's why the conversations are good to have, because I think there is a great balance between, you know, municipalities and like kind of the state influence, and not to get into the politics of everything, but like I said, if things can get done like without policy, I think that's everybody's goal. And I think communities working together and being creative, I think that's what makes affordable housing projects like so amazing and so innovative, is because you do have to have everybody at the table to make it happen. And I think no one wants to move away from that. I think it's just taking a look at there are other states like across the country and cities that do things to influence the development of more affordable homes, which usually take place on, you know, smaller lot sizes, and there are things that we can do with zoning reform and all of that fun stuff to make it possible and to make it pencil. And I think I know a lot of our partners that are stationed in Wasatch and Summit counties already have great relationships like with their local municipalities, and that's how they're able to make some of their projects pencil and make that happen. And so I think it's not a move away from that collaboration, rather than just starting more conversations on what are ways that the state could influence legislation to help people be encouraged to do that. Like, could it be like something where they're incentivized? We do that in other areas, like when it comes to, you know, shelter cities and different things like that. And so it's just taking a look at, you know, what tools can we add to the tool belt and making sure that it does work for everyone. And if it doesn't work for everyone, you know, I think a lot of bills that do try to influence this type of stuff, like have an opt-in or an opt-out. And so I think it's just having those conversations and making sure everybody's on the same page, because I know that that's never anybody's intention to make someone like upset or to do that. And I think you saw that this legislator, people really listening and having that dialogue, which is great.
Okay. The Utah Housing Coalition's annual awards are coming up April 29th in Salt Lake City. The the dinner and award ceremony is sold out. But this year, two Summit County organizations are going to be recognized. The first is the Mountain Mediation Center will be receiving the Housing Stability and Solutions Award. What stood out about their work, and why are they getting this award?
Yeah, and so Mountain Mediation, first off, they're one of our members, and so we have been partnering with them for a really long time, just on several different initiatives, one being the Utah Housing Coalition has a tenant toolkit that is filled with great information for tenants who might be housing insecure, or even tenants who might be renting for the first time, reentering from prison or reentering from homelessness. I mean, it's a great how to rent from point A to point B toolkit. And so with that, it really lends itself to great partnerships with the work that Mountain Mediation is doing over there, because they provide like bilingual education on tenant issues. They help mediate with situations and help really underserved populations be able to stay stable in their housing. And they also have provided and created a lot of like housing stability education, and they're really getting out in communities and helping folks get connected to resources right in their community. And as you can, as you know, you mentioned, especially in Wasatch and Summit counties, you have rents that, you know, are really starting at the low end, like around $2,000. And when you have families who are working and living in Park City, and other areas where there is a lot of tourism, a lot of, you know, need for low wage jobs, and then there are a lot of low wage jobs, you have folks that are struggling to even live where they work, which lends itself to long commutes, which is also expensive. And so I think really what Mountain Mediation is doing is helping people, one, stay in their communities and get connected to other community resources. But two, it's educating them on how to be good tenants, and also helping, you know, with resources when times maybe get tough, like maybe when, you know, you miss a rent payment, or, you know, you find yourself with an eviction or different things like that. It definitely, they do a lot of great work. And so we're very excited to be partnering with them and to, yeah, and to award them for all of their great work, because they've been in the community for a really long time. I also want to mention that the Housing Stability Award is a new award this year. And the reason we created it is because we've seen a need for more community resources like Mountain Mediation. And we want to uplift housing stability programs. And I think it's something where, you know, this is an award where, you know, moving down like into the future of it, you know, I think we'll see like landlords, I think we'll see other mediation groups receiving this award. I think we will see, you know, renting advocacy groups and even like landlord advocacy groups, like kind of coming together to try to make this happen. Because, you know, when you're dealing with a climate where landlords are dealing with vacancy, and then tenants are struggling with affordability, I think it's something where everybody wants people to be stable in their housing. And I think the Mountain Mediation Group, they're a great example of how community members are coming together to make that happen. And so they do amazing work. And so that's kind of the ethos of the award and why we want to focus on it. We think it's so important, because when you don't have enough affordable housing, you need to make sure you have the support services to pick people up and to help them and to guide them to other resources when they fall into economic hardship.
Okay, I got just a minute left or so, but I wanted to recognize also that the Engine House Apartments, this is Park City Municipal Corporation, and developer Jay Fisher being recognized as the Green Project of the Year. So what makes that development noteworthy?
Yeah, so this is a very fun project. A lot of partners who contributed to this, they built it in a way where not only it is energy efficient, but it is affordable. They have many affordable units. I believe it's 123 unit development and includes 99 affordable units inside of it. And so the AMIs, I do believe, range and I 60% AMI is kind of coming to mind, but it's a great affordable housing project that was built with energy efficiency in mind. It has like solar features and other features that not only contribute to energy efficiency, but also to people's cost in their homes. And so it allows utility costs to be reduced for residents. So that's supporting long-time environmental and economic sustainability and resilience.
All right, so I gotta leave it there. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
In the studio now with an update from the Youth Sports Alliance, I have Executive Director Emily Fisher along with Programs Director Heather Sims. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning.
Emily, let's start with the Olympic and Paralympic Parade, a huge success.
Yeah, the parade was so much fun. We do it once every 4 years, and It's one of my favorite events that we do. We had more than 80 athletes from multiple Olympics and Paralympics join the parade this year. Athletes returning from Milan Cortina during the parade, and just super fun community event. Hopefully everybody was there.
Okay. Let's see. The Park City Mountain through Vail Resorts Epic Promise Foundation. How is this helping U Sports Alliance?
Yeah, you know, Park City Mountain was really the flagship partner in our Get Out and Play, Learn to Ski, Learn to Board program. They've been running programs since 2014 when they operated just the canyons. But now, obviously, much more than that. But since 2014, we've had over 5,300 area students learn to ski or snowboard through Vail Resort Epic Promise, most of them from Park City, but also from Wasatch County, South Summit, and a few other schools through our partnership with Ski Utah this year. But if you think about it, that's probably, you know, 25,000 experiences that those kids have had. So very exciting. And when we go and talk to other resorts, we really use Park City Mountain and Vail Resorts Epic Promise as the shining star of how they run their programs. 30% of the students are in full scholarship, and we were able to expand to 9 different resorts this year, but half of those were learning at Park City Mountain.
Oh, wow. So what are some of the other partner resorts?
So let's see. Heather, take it away.
So pretty much every resort except Ulta, so Brighton, Sundance, Deer Valley, Powder Mountain, Snow Basin, Snowbird, Solitude, Woodward. So yeah, we have run programs everywhere except Ulta this season, which has been an amazing opportunity for us.
Yeah, so I mean, people go into Snow Basin and Powder Mountain, or they're out of the Ogden Valley, is that?
Yes, so they're out of the Ogden Valley, and we had 3 programs, 1 at Powder Mountain and 2 at Snow Basin. We picked up kids from Ogden school district and a charter school up there, and the kids had a 4 weeks, just exactly like we do at Park City Mountain, a 4-week program, and learned to ski and snowboard, and it was just an amazing year for us.
All right. Tell me also, you also work with Park City Mountain and PSIA. This is the Professional Ski Instructors of America. To what, teach kids how to be ski instructors?
Yeah, we do a junior, it's called a junior ski instructor program, and basically they have to do 12 hours on snow learning to teach, and then they do 12 hours shadowing. They do a couple hours in the class. This was a partnership that we started with Epic Promise, Park City Mountain, and PSIA, and now has expanded to Solitude because of the success that we've had with Park City Mountain. And we've also had kids then go on and be junior instructors at the mountains.
Wow. And what I really love about this program, and what I love with partnering with Vail Resorts Epic Promise, is that we have students who've learned to ski in our Get Out and Play program and then come back as junior and ski instructors, and they can say to the students, like, hey, this is how I learned to ski, or we have native Spanish speakers who learned to ski in our program and now are able to coach our Learn to Ski program in Spanish for those students who are native Spanish speakers. So having the advantage of being around and partnering with Park City Mountain since 2014, it's really awesome to see this legacy and multiple generations getting out and learning to ski.
Okay, so these are the older students who have kind of gone through the program and then
yep.
are there for your after school programs.
Exactly, yep. Hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Heather, you've still got a few programs running?
Yep. We still have some programs running. We have some programs starting this Friday and then the following Friday. We have some ice skating and mountain biking. We actually pushed mountain biking off a week, but we didn't need to. But so that starts on May 1st. We also have sailing. We have a first aid class and a bunch of other programs that people can go online and under our after-school programs at ysausa.org.
Okay, and then tell me about the partnership with the Wills Foundation.
Yeah, so this is our second year with them, and on April 27th, we're teaming up with the Wills Foundation to offer an e-bike safety course. There is a new law taking effect this year on May 6th that requires riders of e-bicycles and e-motorcycles under the age of 21 to wear a helmet.
which they should be wearing a helmet anyway. And beginning next year, additional changes take effect with which require children's age 8 to 15 to, when they're operating e-devices under the supervision of a parent or adult, to complete an online electric vehicle safety education and training course to obtain a personal, e-certificate to ride without an adult. And so we are offering this class at Ecker on April 27th. It's $10. It's subsidized with Will's Foundation. And it's for those middle school and ninth graders to get their certificate now. It lasts a lifetime, so it's not, you don't have to renew it. We also have two tiers of scholarships available for all our programs. Families earning under $50,000 annually may apply for a full scholarship by selecting the scholarship ticket during registration. And then households earning $50,000 to $120,000 are eligible for partial scholarships.
Okay, so on the e-bike training on the 27th, that's going to be at Ecker Hill. What time?
Yep, it's right after school on a Friday. It's right after school at 3:40 when the kids get out. And if they don't have to have their bike present, they do a, it's an in-class, but then there will be some stuff outside, but they don't have to have their e-bike there.
Okay. Now, is that certificate, is that part of the new law that's going into effect?
No, this actually was a certification that the Wills Foundation have been involved with, but it does qualify for the new law to be when it comes into place next year.
Okay. And let's see, you're also hiring. Tell me about the jobs you've got available.
Yeah, so we want people to come and work with me. We're expanding, and we've got two positions available, one at Park City as a Park City manager and one in Wasatch. And, you know, we've had incredible success this year with our programs. And so we're looking to hire two new managers. And so if anyone out there is interested in working and having lots of fun with kids and getting kids outside and off screens, please reach out to me. My email is heather@ysausa.org.
Okay. Anything else, ladies?
I just wanted to give a big shout out. We had some great community support for our parade. John and Kelly Murko hosted the athlete party and media availability at their restaurant Fireside before the event. That was wildly helpful for us. Also, Park City Municipal Corporation, you know, we could not do it without them. They are a huge community partner and help to us. Also, Summit County Rap Tax Grants Program, and then Ryan Walsh of Mountain Town Music for announcing the parade from the Annex balcony. So many more community partners that supported us, but just huge thank you to the community for coming out and supporting the parade.
Okay. Heather, Emily, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
We're on the phone now with an update from the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. I have Director Robert Parrish. Good morning.
Good morning.
So happening this week is the second community member meeting for the Trailside Wheels Park. When and where is this happening?
So this will be at our administrative office at Trailside. We are going to have the opportunity for attendees to review and respond to the early design concepts were developed based on feedback that we gathered in 2 months ago at our first workshop. So we'll have the first opportunity for people to really come take a look at what Spawn Ranch has designed. They're going to provide a brief project overview presenting two concepts that they've rendered in 3D. So we'll really be able to take a look at that. And that's really going to serve as the focal point of the discussion. And then, you know, we really want people to be ready to ask questions so that we can share feedback from the design team and from our folks. And then, you know, really, you know, for those that are unable to attend in person, you know, although we prefer that to give feedback in person, and there's going to be a brief survey available, we will have it available via Microsoft Teams. So we'll publish a Teams link to where people can participate and at least watch the presentation from Spawn Ranch online. And then we're going to have a future public meeting to showcase the near final design once the last round of public input is received on that project before we actually begin construction.
Okay, again,
so that's the highlight for that one.
Yeah, again, this is happening this Thursday, the 23rd at 6 p.m., again, in person or online. And again, people would be able to find that team link online at on your website?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Tell me where this Trailside Wheels Park is planned for.
It's in the existing skate park that's up at the top of the hill, just below our mountain bike course that's there. So it's right here at Trailside.
So it would be in addition to, or are you going to kind of redesign what you've got there already?
We're redesigning what's there already.
Okay.
So everything that's there is kind of put in place concrete. So we plan on removing what's there. We're going to reuse the existing concrete slab, but we're going to expand upon what's there. So it really will be a fresh, brand new Wheels Park.
All right. Let's see. Coming up next month, you have some community meetings, also a survey for input on future facilities and programs. So when and where are those happening?
Yes, so the survey will go live today. We'll have that available, a link on our website, and people will be able to take the survey through May 10th. But in conjunction with that, we're hosting on May 5th, 6th, and 7th a series of open houses. We will be at the field house on May 5th in the morning from open till noon. And then the evening of the 6th, we'll be here at our Trailside office for a few hours, starting at 6 o'clock, five to seven. And then on Thursday, we'll be at the field house again in the afternoon from about noon till close. And that'll be really an opportunity for us to engage with the public, allow public to ask us questions. We're really basically what we're kind of saying is this is kind of finding a better ways to play. When we conducted our 2024 strategic plan, we did an 18-month survey where we really talked to people out in the community about what the needs are for new and or improved recreational opportunities in the district. And so we have a couple of concepts as far as programming, but we're really looking for feedback from folks as to, you know, what they're really seeing as a need for us to add things like, you know, do we need another indoor field? Do we need more outdoor soccer or lacrosse fields? There has been talk about an aquaplex. So we'll really have an opportunity for people to provide us input as to the type of recreation or fitness activities and programming that they want to see. Really talk about a couple of facilities. We do have the property that we own in Silver Creek Village. And then if anybody's been paying attention to the county development over at the Klein Dolly property, which is over near Jeremy Ranch, the county has some interest in letting us have a part of that parcel develop a rec center there. So we're really having an opportunity to look at the growth that's coming within the district, where the current field house is overstressed and overused, and have an opportunity to really provide some community-based fitness and recreation, but then also some additional amenities. So we'll be out there, you know, employees, myself will be there, be able to answer questions. And the nice thing about the survey is if, you know, it goes live today, if people take the survey, but then they happen to come to one of our open houses and they decide to change their mind, the survey will be open to each individual based on your email account to be able to go back through and kind of change your responses if you find some information or through, you know, talking with us, you really want to change that. And we're really encouraging families, seniors, people of all ages that live in the district to respond, because it's one of the things we're really looking at is the holistic approach to recreation and fitness. You know, how do we address the needs of families? How do we address the needs of our senior population as far as senior fitness, senior lifestyle? And then just overall, just fitness in general, you know, what's going on at the field house? You know, we'll have a series of questions like, you know, have you had to wait for a half an hour to get on a treadmill type of thing? Or, you know, have you ever thought about visiting the field house to work out but have decided not to because you knew it would be busy? Knowing that we have the developments going on in Kimball Junction with the Dakota Pacific development that's going to put 1,000 units there, there's other developments that are going on within the district that will be putting additional residences here. It's really about identifying, you know, are we right-sized for the future and making sure that we can meet the needs of all the residents within the district.
Yeah, so at these open houses, will the district have anything on display for people to look at, or is it really just kind of a one-on-one opportunity to ask questions and learn more?
No, we actually are treating this as a poster session. So we do have a couple of bubble diagrams. It's not exactly like a blueprint or a floor plan of a facility, but it's really just a diagram to show kind of some square foot allocation and how things will flow. So we will have some visuals, and then it'll be part of the survey as well. We do have some aerial satellite pictures showing the areas of development where those would be. the district as a whole. So we do have the availability for people to look at that. And then when we do the poster sessions, we'll have a listing of the various different programs that seem to be the highest ranking that came out of our surveys from the 2024 Strategic Plan Initiative. We'll have that available. And of course, you know, we'll have the opportunity for people to, you know, if we haven't thought of something or hasn't been addressed, we'll have a basically open comment to where people can provide whatever ideas they feel that the district needs.
Yeah. And you guys have a good idea of how the current field house is used. I mean, right? I mean, is the walking track, I mean, do we need another one or is that enough? Or like the golf simulator, I mean, is that getting so well used that you do need another one? Things like that.
Well, that's one of the things we're asking, and we recognize that some of the opportunities and facilities and or program that we're offering at current field house are underutilized. So if it's underutilized, obviously we would want to duplicate that. But there are things, you know, like the field itself. We have heard a need from a lot of user groups that there is a need for an additional indoor field for, you know, winter use. For example, the some lacrosse and soccer teams. We were having to plow the outside fields here at Trailside a few weeks ago when the snow was on there so that the teams can get out there and start their spring practice. So having an additional indoor field might be something that the community has a want for. We've heard from the climbing community that having an indoor climbing gym might be of interest. So really anything and everything's on the table. And if we have enough citizens come forth and say, hey, the golf simulator, you know, I can never get, you know, never book time because it's always busy. Well, then we can look at that. So, you know, anything and everything is a possibility.
Yeah. And what about an opportunity for partnership so that the costs aren't on the back of just those living within the rec district? I mean, what about, you know, Park City Municipal, North and South Summit Recreation Districts, and building something that, you know, that the county can use?
We are looking at that as well, all partnerships. We have had some outreach to several different focus user groups. And I know that there are some user groups out there, you know, like Park City Pickleball and a few others that, you know, people are willing to donate money for a facility or something, but we need to have a base facility to start that. So the plan is that if we at least, particularly like with the Silver Creek Village parcel that, you know, we need to be able to develop, get an anchor facility. And from there, you know, I have impact fees. We can go after grants. We can go after donations, whether it be corporate or individual donations to build that additional facility. So I'm really looking at this as kind of a phased approach, but we need to start somewhere. And so this is really what we're wanting the public to weigh in on is, okay, where do we start? What's the starting facility? And then what other things do we do that we can go out and target donations, or we can target grants, or we can target partnerships, whether it be a public-private partnership for a facility or any type of recreational opportunity. We know there's a lot out there, and we just need to be able to have a starting point. And this is really what this is about, is that where do we start for
okay.
the future?
All right. Let's see. I saw an alert that you'll be closing the locker room, restrooms, and showers at the Basin Fieldhouse this week. How long will they be closed?
It'll be closed for a couple of weeks. We've got to redo some things there. When we closed them off, there were some issues with looking at it. We had some fire code issues. So we just need to do some correction of the construction. And then we're hearing from people that they don't ventilate very well, that they become steam rooms. So we're going to put in some ventilation to pull some of the steam out of there. And we also had some issues with the tiles. So the shower floors are basically running out into the open. So we're going to have the contractor fix that so that the showers drain into the drain and not into the changing area.
Yeah. So are the repairs, who's paying for them? The contractor?
Contractor. Some of this was some things that the contractor needs to repair. There are a few other things that we're working with the designer on getting addressed. And then there are a few things like some additional fire alarms, fire sprinklers, fire detection that we need to add in. because it was a difference in interpretation of the code when we put the shower stalls in, that now they're considered to be individual closed spaces. So we have to, you know, we have to update the fire alarms and fire sprinklers and that type of thing. So it was just some oversight that is between the design team and the contractor. But it's not anything that we can't work through. But unfortunately, it's just going to take a couple weeks for us to get those solutions put into place.
Okay. Any other construction projects contemplated this summer?
Nothing major, but from a trail standpoint, we do have crews out working on the Mid-Mountain trail this week, doing some down trail cleaning and clearing. Run Amuck reopens today, so I know residents will be excited about that. So we had a recovery process going for that for the last month and a half. It's done well, so that'll be reopening. The Robs Trail trailhead parking will reopen today. The seasonal closure has ended, so all the snow and everything is gone from there. And then the only other thing for the trails, they're mostly in good shape. We just ask the people that if you see wet ground, turn around. So we're not degrading the trails by trekking or riding through mud and causing trail damage.
Okay, Rob, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.